It's 27 to 7. Time for headlines.
Thank you, Wallace. Foreign Affairs Minister Winston Peters says New Zealand is a long way from deciding if it will get involved with the AUKUS military pact. In a major speech, Mr. Peters said AUKUS countries would have to invite New Zealand to participate in Pillar 2. Only if that happened would New Zealand decide if it wanted to be involved. KiwiBank's chief economist expects unemployment to rise to more than 5% by the year's end, currently sitting at 4.3%, 134,000 people. Retiring Green MP James Shaw has delivered his valedictory at Parliament. Wellington Hospital is in partial lockdown after a gun was fired outside the building. There are no reports of injuries. And some students at a University of Auckland rally for Palestine appear to be settling in for the night, despite the institution saying that is not allowed. Looking at traffic, it's running fairly normally. Heavy, of course, on the southern. It's about 48 minutes from the CBD to Takanini, 26 on the northern to Otiha Valley Road, and a slow crawl on the northwestern all the way out to Te Atatū, around 43 minutes for that. And a bit in Wellington as well, bit of congestion up the Nauranga Gorge and around Petone on the Hutt Expressway. But that's our news headlines. We'll be back with more at 7 o'clock.
This morning on First Up, in the wake of a recent mauling death of a dog out with its owner, we found that commercial dog walkers like Amanda Easterbrook also aren't immune.
I was attacked when I walked my two dogs last night by a private owner with seven German Shepherds.
Pardon? Seven? Daily.
Seven, yep.
And a new report shows that very few people are looking to buy homes.
I do think that as the market moves, there's sort of less liquidity in the market, homes are taking longer to sell. That means that the total number of homes available increases because properties are staying on the market for longer.
Download First Up, the podcast, or join me, Nathan Rattery, weekday mornings live from 5 on RNZ National.
New Zealand Music Month starts today, and I know there's a lot of great new music. I get that, I really do, but they don't sound like Arja, do they? No, they do not sound like Arja at all. No one has the soul, funk and groove that this band has. They call their unique style polyfunk and refers to their blending of Polynesian sounds such as log drums and ukuleles with funk and R&B. And in 87, they recorded their self-titled debut after winning the Reineck Rock Award. Good band, eh?
Oh, amazing. This is a garage party. Like, this is the spoons out, the guitar going.
and the Reineck going.
Betty, I think it was Betty Ann and Ryan Monger. I mean, that bass line. Stop it, right? Oh, yeah, anyway, bringing back Arja. New Zealand Music Month kicking off today. All right, time for I've Been Thinking. Verity, take it away.
Okay, so I really would like to know what we think about this. This is definitely for the nation. Is it creepy to talk to strangers in public anymore? Because I had this conversation with this chick, and she'd maybe be like 5 years younger than me, so she's definitely Gen Z. And I was saying that I met my first boyfriend because I was talking to him in a lift at work, and we were just like, you know, and this would have been maybe like, how old am I? This would have been like 11, 12 years ago. So kind of smartphones were a thing, but they weren't the level that they're currently at. And, you know, you just banter and stuff. And she was saying that it's really creepy to talk to strangers in like in a lift these days because people will be like, ew, get away from me. But also, you would just be on your phone. If you have a moment of silence when you're in public with other people, you're not going to be like looking for an opportunity to chat. You'll just be scrolling TikTok. And I was curious, do we think that, like, it's become creepy to talk to strangers, especially if you're, like, trying a bit of flirting, banter vibe? Is that now, like, off
the cards?
Well,
that is a bit weird, yeah.
Yeah.
It would be strange.
Do you find that weird?
It would be strange to talk to someone in a lift.
In general or now?
No, just in general. would it not? What do you say?
Well, you know, I mean, nice shoes. Nice.
Yeah. Oh, like, oh, it's raining. Oh, good. It's cold outside. Oh, that looks like
nice
a good coffee.
Shoes.
We've forgotten how to speak to people, though,
yeah,
right? Like, you know, you would have rocked up a few lines at the bar standing once upon a time.
You would have said something, right?
No, I wasn't that type of person.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I wasn't that type of person.
But, like, what if you're in an elevator and someone glamorous and chatty says something to you like, oh, you know, that's a nice jacket. You know, you wouldn't. You would find that creepy?
Oh, no, well, I'd say thank you very much, but I would find that unusual.
But,
yeah.
Like,
are you saying we're losing that touch? We're losing what it means to be human?
Yeah, I genuinely would say that. I said to a woman who made my coffee today, oh, you look very glamorous, because she did look very glamorous, but she was barista, and she looked at me like I just sort of like fallen from heaven and was this Archangel Gabriel had come to like change her day. And I was like, I didn't even think twice about it. She did look glamorous. Okay. But it just struck me that people find
but it wasn't
casual
up to you.
Weird.
It wasn't up to you to say that.
But it made
why not?
But it made her day. Like
did
everyone loves being told that they look good or they feel important or they look special. I would spend 90% of any evening telling people they look good.
I think we're scared of being rejected though, eh?
Yes. Agreed. Very much agreed. And when you go on your phone, if you're like on an app or whatever, you know that they like you, so you know that you can talk to them, whereas in real life, you don't know if they like you.
Fair enough. Very good. We'll see what the listeners think about that. Do you think that we should get back the talking to strangers? 2101 Scott Campbell.
I've been thinking, well, a lot actually for the last 14 months. So just coming up to the end of our executive MBA, and I've got a shout out to all of my mates who have been on this journey with me. But the actual reason why I wanted to bring it up is that, you know, when I first studied, I failed miserably. And now I'm a bit more mature and experienced and old. And actually going through this journey has been really awesome. And I think I've enjoyed it more now than probably what I would have earlier in life. I think when I first went to uni, I was there pretty much for the course, like student loan money that you got and you went down to the bar and that type of thing.
Skiing,
yeah, new tyres on the car. But actually, I think learning and the journey of learning and what I've seen now is that actually you can do it mid-career, mid-journey, mid-life, all those types of things. And it's been an awesome thing
I've often heard that, and I'd love to know, I might carry it over tomorrow actually, if you started learning mid-career, what did you do? And what did you get from it? That's a really interesting point.
Well, a lot of it's validation, I've found at least anyway, because you've done a whole bunch of things and now you can validate. The other one, though, is that you go, ah, oh, that's why that happened.
Oh,
very good.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. I totally agree with Verity. It's great to talk to strangers, especially just giving a compliment. Yes, Verity, I love those little incidental conversations with total strangers. They actually light up my day, says Jane. All right. Maybe I was wrong. 19-7, the panel. Well, the government has announced an independent review into the disability support system funded by the Ministry of Disabled Peoples, Whaikaha. A three-person review panel will be appointed within the next few weeks. The review will include eligibility for disability support services with a focus on entitlement to and allocation of funding. It's been a ministry under fire. Former Minister for Disability Issues, Penny Simmons, stripped of her portfolio. Our guest says the government needs to do better for disabled people. With us is Disability Support Network CEO Peter Reynolds. Kia ora, Peter.
G'day.
Did you expect to see disability issues, be honest with me, so front and centre in the headlines for 2024?
Yes. Yes, I did.
In what way?
It's getting to crisis point. As much as I hate doing the Oliver Twist routine of saying, please give me some more money, it actually is getting to that point very, very quickly. It's not just Whaikaha that's running out of money. It's also the service provision. So what is paid to care and support workers? What's paid to providers to keep them going? What's paid to people who receive funding for their support directly on individualised funding packages? So it's getting to a critical point.
And you said something that really sort of struck accord with me, Peter. They said in the disability support system, there is no back line. Nearly all the money goes to frontline.
Nearly all the money goes to frontline, that's a fact, but also we're totally reliant on government funding in order to make the system work.
Hey, we have a panel with us, Peter. Let's bring them in. Verity.
Sure, Peter. I'm curious. What do you think the biggest thing that would actually help or improve or fix this situation that this government could reasonably do in the next 6 months would be?
Look, a while ago, Verity, I would have said, let's have a look at the contract terms and conditions. There's quite a bit of that needs to be sorted out. plenty of barriers to actually delivering a good innovative service, something that meets the needs of disabled people, wouldn't necessarily increase cost, but would just move some of the bureaucracy out of the way. Right now, though, because of these funding issues, the money's come to the top of the list. I wish it didn't, but that's the problem we face.
Scott.
Just the Whaikaha was a new ministry which came out of some of the changes under the previous government. Have you seen, was there much benefit? Was there much, I guess, good that came out of that transition? Or are we much the same?
No, we're starting to see some good. Paula Tesoreo, who's the CEO there, has been trying to implement a different way of working, a more consultative approach. They stuffed it up with the introduction of funding guidelines for equipment and individualised funding, but that's really the only blip on the radar. The rest of the time, they've been trying to work in an affable and consultative way with the sector, which is good and is refreshing. But they were set up to fail. They were set up with insufficient money to do the job, to get the people on board that they needed, and to be able to really achieve some successes. And that's frustrating.
Now, so you, the Disability Support Network, in terms of these new terms of references or the terms of reference, have they brought you around the table on this?
And that's an interesting question. Not yet. We would like to think that they have. We would like to think that they will. But we haven't had that reach out just yet. And it's a bit ironic, because if we think back to the March 18th announcement from Whaikaha, that said, look, we're going to introduce these purchasing guidelines. What kicked up the biggest fuss in the sector was the fact that it was sort of imposed. There was a surprise element to it. Nobody knew it was coming. So they came back and apologised. The minister apologised. Whaikaha apologised. And everybody promised to do better and to ensure that they consulted with the sector. Here we are with a brand new minister. And lo and behold, we're getting an announcement that we haven't really been part of.
Okay,
welcome the review.
That's interesting, isn't it? So the announcement's been made, the terms of reference are set, but you, so far, the Disability Support Network have not been consulted on the disability review.
No, so, I mean, we'll be raising that with the minister and saying, well, gosh, we'd really like to be part of a discussion that helps to set the parameters for the review. What we're hopeful of is that the review will throw a spotlight on these funding issues. They're not going to get fixed overnight. I mean, we understand that the government is a bit short on cash, but at the same time, we're looking for a plan to rectify that over time.
It's a big deal, isn't it, Scott? Because when you look at the stats, a huge amount of Kiwis actually live with a disability, don't they?
Yeah, and that was probably going to be my next question, Peter. Why are costs going up? Are we finding that more people are living with disabilities or...?
Look, without being trite about it, when's the last time you bought a cabbage? These things have been going up for a while. The cost of providing support has been increasing for a while. About the only thing that hasn't really increased is the cost of wages. Now, that might sound a bit strange, but care and support workers are paid according to the funding that was set down by government as a result of an agreement in 2017. We've got a pay equity claim in the process at the moment. That's going to cost an arm and a leg to settle, but it needs to be settled and settled quickly because we've got a good number of people under that funding system who are paid minimum wage to do the job they do, and we don't think that's particularly fair.
So finally, Peter, what are a couple of key things that you want done? You said that actually you need to get a 10% increase to actually just keep the engine running.
Look, we've been talking about 24%, you know, being behind by that figure just on inflation over the last decade. What we're not doing is saying, come on, give us a 24% increase. That's a bit unreasonable. But we want to be engaged. We want to be around the table to say, look, we've got these issues. Engage with us on how those issues can be resolved. And let's see a plan toward getting us back into a position where providing these support services becomes viable again.
All right. Well, very good to have you on, Peter. Kia ora. That's the Disability Support Network CEO, Peter Reynolds. Isn't it interesting? And from a political angle too, Scott, it's really become the topic. And perhaps, as some have said, it is possibly one of the subjects where the ball was dropped in the new coalition government?
Yeah, well, that's what government support is meant to be there for, right? For people right. who are the most vulnerable in our communities. Well, at least that's what I think anyway. And so when you are in these types of communities with disabilities or you are in lower socioeconomic, when you are dependent on the government for support, my belief is government should be there for you. Now, I think that they did drop the ball big time in some of the announcements when they first walked into this.
Because it's hard to disagree about we should care for our most vulnerable in a society.
I think so.
Right.
But then when you're not engaging with the same people in that community, then they're dropping the ball again.
Yeah, that lack of consultation is definitely the most crazy part of that, right? I mean, wouldn't you make that the priority for fixing this? But also, we're bad at looking after the most vulnerable sectors, like New Zealand. Like, look at like Aranga Tamariki and like how we failed vulnerable children. Like, this is just another example of how we keep failing really vulnerable sections of society.
11 away from 7, the panel, we have Verity Johnson and Scott Campbell. Meanwhile, yes, your I've Been Thinking has really touched a nerve there, Verity, and the fact that I don't engage small talk out in lifts.
It's got people talking.
Yeah.
Oh, look at the irony.
There you go. I work in a public space library, and I'm used to talking to people, and I often talk casually to people beside me in a queue or a lift, bus, if I think they're not occupied. Interesting. Do you really? But look, here is the text of the evening, and I've got to read it out. I do. This is Liz. So my 17-year-old son lost his phone and had to drive to Thames to sit his full driving license. Without a phone, he had no maps and had to stop a couple of times to ask directions and, hey, talk to people. It was a revelation to him. He said, I talked to so many people I never would have talked to normally, and they were all lovely. I should do this more often.
See what I mean? Humanity is lovely. You just have to like break the ice with the tiniest of inconsequential questions and they surprise you.
That's true though. A lot of people struggle to pick up the phone now, right? It's easier just to text, email.
That's true.
Snap.
Mm. I think that's also because phone calls can be very inefficient right. though.
Okay.
But agreed.
Someone's getting quite specific here. It is a vile indictment on humanity that you cannot have eye contact, let alone dialogue. Wallace. Wow. The very best suburb for human contact is Beachhaven. Interesting. And the worst is Herne Bay and Kingsland.
That's getting really
all right,
regional.
Very specific. Yes. So thank you for that. Anyway, I wanted to sort of get to this. The most overrated city, a survey out, tourist ratings have unveiled the world's most overrated cities for 2024. It includes 85 of the most popular destinations worldwide. So Bangkok in Thailand retains the title as the one of the world's most overrated cities. 18.4% call it overrated. Auckland's in there. 10% of tourists dislike Auckland. So what is the most overrated city you've been? For a second year in a row, tourist ratings reveal the world's most overrated. So someone said to me on by text, Toronto, it's like Auckland but flat and cold. wow. Kate and Karori says Paris. It's boring, it's hot, there's too many tourists, and every corner and building looked exactly the same as the last.
Did you say boring?
Yep. There's no grass, and there's very few trees. Paris was a really big disappointment. Interesting, isn't it? So around the panel, well, you're a global city, a citizen, Verity. what did you think of Auckland? London.
I often think of myself as being in a long-term marriage with Auckland. 5 days out of seven, I'll wake up and be like, I hate the way you breathe. And then 2 days out of seven, it'll do something tiny. And I'll be like, oh my God, I love you so much. So I loathe and love Auckland in equal measures. It's incredibly underwhelming as a city.
Is it?
But the people are fantastic. So that's the great
what
tension.
What about the Sky Tower? Stuff like that.
Are you honestly telling me that a giant lollipop is the height of our sophistication?
Have you been up it?
Of course I've been up it. I'm trying
That's
to
great.
Find the height. It's not great, Wallace. Raise your expectations.
It's amazing.
Okay, they have a semi-decent bar up there, which I have been to. But
come
honestly,
on.
No. Oh, my God.
Get into it.
No, it's, Auckland could be so much better, and it suffers
like
from a fundamental lack of ambition.
I love Auckland.
No, my God. It needs the architecture of Melbourne. It needs the shows of Sydney. And the restaurants of Wellington.
Sam in Wellington says, amen. Another Auckland hater.
Yeah, look, I do live here, though. So.
All right, okay, so you see Auckland, do you agree with this? Underwhelming.
Honolulu, second option. Honolulu really? Is a terrible city, terrible. I was expecting Jason Momoa and Mr. Snuffleupagus, didn't get either of those, just got the smell of urine constantly.
Yeah, I reckon that as well, too. So I went with big expectations to Honolulu.
Yep.
And it was the grotty smell,
yep.
The just that,
really?
The traffic.
It smells, doesn't it?
And then you leave, like, the city part, and you go out and you see the beaches and that. And then you know, you're captivated again. Timaru, though, I was interested that Timaru made it onto the list there, Wallace.
Yeah, I'd have stuck that in, didn't I? Perhaps meanly. Anyway, someone says, cut that out. Timaru is the best kept secret in the South Island. Beautiful people, beaches, and very family orientated, says Deborah. Still in Timaru. Casablanca, mostly a hole, says someone. I totally agree with Sam regarding Paris. I've been there maybe four times and found it smelly and dirty, says Kate in Ashburton. I completely disagree with the Paris detractors. I've been there three times over 30 years, most recently last year. It is a beautiful city. Green spaces, magnificent buildings, and you can walk to all the great tourist attractions. So, yeah, very interesting response here.
I agree. I feel like Kiwis have a very love-hate relationship with Paris because Paris is very different in terms of cities to New Zealand cities. Paris is good for Europeans who are used to kind of like grey and dirt as a norm, whereas I think Kiwis find it weird.
I'm pretty impressed Hamilton hasn't been brought up yet, actually.
Well, the city, yeah, well, let me, that's another topic. It's a panel topic, that one.
Anyway,
one
Tron, actually.
Here's the second favourite text of the night. Venice is also boring. It's like a chessboard with a gelato shop. Okay, five away from seven, the panel into this. New Brighton in Christchurch has been home to a destination playground for half a century, but now that is going to be torn down. In its place, council plans to plant a new plastic playground, which, according to over 1,000 people who have signed a petition, won't do. With us to explain the issue, we have Alex Hewison. He started the petition, which will be presented to council Monday. Kia ora, Alex.
Good evening, Wallace. How are you?
Very well. I'm a playground connoisseur. Explain the fuss over this one playground. Why so important to your community?
Absolutely. So the playground was a huge fort that was built in the 70s, and it's been a staple of our community for decades. Generations have grown up around the playground, so it came as no surprise that people were devastated when we were told it's unsafe and being taken down. I advocated really staunchly for a like-for-like replacement and was assured by council staff that it would be. And to this minute, they still stand by their comments that it is like-for-like. In reality, the new design is significantly smaller. It doesn't cater for the same age range of groups the previous one did, and it doesn't reflect the landmark-type playground that stood in its place.
Oh, this is quite a story. You've got this half a century old fort going to be replaced with one of these half-sized new ones, Verity.
I have questions, Alex. When you say fort, do you mean like a castle? Was there like a moat? Was there a dragon? Like, how extreme are we talking?
Yeah, I'm seeing that.
Yeah,
in my head.
Yeah, content fire.
Lots of wooden platforms. I'd compare it to a castle.
Okay, I'm getting castle vibes. Why do you care so much about this? This is a very specific thing to care about.
Absolutely. Well, I used to grow up going down the slide with my family. My dad went down the slide with his dad. It's been in our community for generations. So when we were told that it would be taken down, community groups got in touch with me with lots of concerns regarding the smaller footprint, the lack of the double slide, the lack of the tunnel. What we're seeing nowadays are playgrounds being replaced with smaller, plastic, cookie-cutter, subpar options, and this playground was a different one, and we really loved that, which is why I advocated for it to be like-for-like. But to be fair, to say that the new design is like for like is like saying a footpath is the same as a road. It just simply doesn't add up.
All right, Scott.
Who hasn't fallen off the monkey bars or the jungle gym monkey or bars. The flying fox, right? That's where you learn. That's like where you learn to take risks. Like, do I jump from here to there? Do I not? Like, how many people have been injured on that playground, Alex? I'm sure there's been some study done on it.
Look, I've asked, but we didn't get that given to us. But, hey, listen, I've fallen off that playground myself.
So, look, here you want a fort built. Is this not, though, we've talked about the cost of living. 31,000 people are on the dole extra in a year. And here you want a luxurious playground. Isn't that a nice to have, Alex?
Absolutely not. I think every community deserves the right to have a playground that meets the needs. I've worked to find additional funding that comes out of existing budgets, so no additional overall spend would occur if the board agrees to it.
What's wrong with a few monkey bars on asphalt? Because kids use their imagination.
Look, there's nothing wrong with monkey bars, but the fact is that this playground is used by community groups across the city. People come, they have events in at the park. I was talking to a mother that took her child down for a playground for a birthday party last week. This community loves this playground, and it's used across the city. So it's not just on
Ashbelt. Hey, all the very best. We'll keep in touch, see where that debate heads. Alex, kia ora. And to you, Verity Johnson, to you, Scott Campbell, kia ora to you both. Fantastic show. Appreciate your time. Wallace Chapman here with you till 8. Stick around right here, RNZ National.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.